This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. Casey Affleck has appeared in 22 films over the last dozen years, but he's often been referred to as the other Affleck, a reference to his older brother, Ben Affleck. But that's changing now, thanks in part to Casey Affleck's starring roles in two films now out on DVD, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford and Gone Baby Gone. Both performances have won critical praise. Gone Baby Gone is the directorial debut of Ben Affleck. Among Casey Affleck's other films are To Die For, Good Will Hunting, Jerry, and Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. Gone Baby Gone is based on a novel by Dennis Lehane, who also wrote Mystic River. Affleck plays a small-time private detective who's asked to help find an abducted child. In this scene, he's visiting a drug dealer and is willing to help the dealer out with the problem in return for help finding the missing child, named Amanda McCready.
You found what you were looking for in Chelsea.
What I care about Chelsea?
There's one of the idiots that robbed you who lived there.
What idiot?
One that you and Chris beat with a pipe and shot in the chest.
I don't know about nobody getting killed. But if somebody robbed me and end up dead, well, you know, life. These are
Cheese, we got your money. It was buried in Ray's backyard. We want to give it back to you in exchange for Amanda McCready. The two police outside are the only other people who know.
No one gives a f*** about what you did. I mean, I didn't even like Ray that much. You're gonna get your money, the mother gets her daughter back, and we'll say we found the kid in the bushes or whatever. It's either this, real quiet, or it's 1,000 cops kicking your door in, putting their fat knees in your neck.
I spoke to Casey Affleck last fall when Gone Baby Gone was released in theaters. The film is set in Boston, where Casey and Ben Affleck grew up. Well, Casey Affleck, welcome to Fresh Air. When you had to craft this character, this private eye from this working-class neighborhood of Dorchester, were there people that you knew that you grew up with that you sort of drew on to craft this character?
Well, in different ways, yes. No, there was not one single person, but I knew the accent. I knew the way that people dressed and kind of what music they listened to, what kind of jobs they had, what their attitudes were towards everything from police to themselves to their children to I knew what kind of slang that they used. You know, it's just as an actor, it just means that you don't have to go spend 4 months listening to a dialect coach and trying to get the accent right and sort of wandering, you know, getting to know people there just to figure out, like, when they wear their sweats and when they put on their, like, ironed, jeans.
Boston is a character in the, you know, Dennis Lehane's novels, and it's clearly a character in this film, and I think really evocatively drawn out by, you know, by your brother as the director. Were there moments in the dialogue and scenes that you kind of felt like, yeah, this is really what I know, this is so familiar to me?
Well, I mean, just about all of it, except for the police work. You know, anytime we were shooting kind of in the neighborhood where the character lived, and with people, you know, there's a scene in a bar, and we go in there to talk to, we're looking for this missing girl, and this is a place where the mother hung out. And so we go in there to talk to people and find out, you know, see if we can get some information. And it's the middle of the day, and there's about 6 or 7 guys, you know, alcoholics, you know, kind of sitting there in the middle of the day, you know, and it's the kind of place where my father worked when I was a kid as a bartender. It's the kind of place where, you know, I actually spent some time as a kid. And when Ben was scouting the location, he went there in the middle of the day and he said, okay, all of you, I want you to just be here, you know, and next week on Monday, and you're going to be in the movie. They kind of all shrugged their shoulders and we showed up next week, and there they were, you know, still sitting there in their stools and probably hadn't left, and so they ended up in the movie.
You know, you know the director of this film very well. He's your brother, Ben Affleck, and he happened to be on Fresh Air right after you finished shooting this, and we asked him about what it was like directing you, his brother, and I thought we'd maybe just listen to what he told Terry Gross about directing you in the film.
It was really interesting, you know. It was kind of it's hard because you have to put on a different hat. You know what I mean? You can't have this conversation with your brother the way you'd have it with your brother if he's an actor in your movie. You have to treat him as you would treat an actor in the movie, which sometimes means, I mean, something as simple as trying to swallow the urge to strangle him, you know, or to be really curt with, like, just because I said to do it that way, that's why, you know, instead of going like, well, okay, that's interesting. I hear you. Let's process what you're talking about. So it was an exercise in self-discipline. But, you know, my brother, the thing that's really rewarding is that he's a really, really good actor, and he's typically been seen in, you know, kind of character roles as well. So I think, you know, I have the good fortune of being able to show an audience something kind of new and surprising that's also really good. And that's a rarity.
And that's Ben Affleck speaking with Terry Gross, talking about directing our guest, his brother, Casey Affleck. Well, Casey, now we have to turn to you. What was it like from your end?
Well, let me just tell you, first of all, he rarely swallowed the urge to strangle him. If he felt that urge, he usually went for it. And what's more is I don't think I ever heard him say, I hear you, and let me process that. It's funny characterization of how he worked. But he was, I sort of feel sort of the opposite. I don't feel like he ever had to put on a different hat. I kind of felt like, you know, a great advantage that we had was that we were kind of brothers who had this relationship for 32 years, that we kind of had every possible kind of conversation one could have. You know, I mean, I've asked for him for advice. He's come to me for advice. We've fought. We've helped each other, lied to each other, kept secrets, told the truth. And, you know, we've kind of been through it all. So, and what's more is that, you know, on top of it all, he had a fabulous way of talking to actors. I think just because he's been an actor, you know, he never got the megaphone and put on the boots and the scally cap, but never did like the old director thing. Listen, pal, and I guess say all your lines and go. You know, it was he just said, you know, I think it's like this. I think you should try it like that. Or it seemed to me like it was Ben that I'd sat on a couch next to 100,000 times, watched a movie with, and talked to him about it.
Well, Casey Affleck, you have another film out that's getting a lot of great reviews, and that's The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, the assassin being yourself. And this is just a fascinating story where you play this man who was, you know, an obsessed fan of Jesse James, who eventually becomes close to him and then does him in. It's a fascinating story based on a historical novel. How did you prepare for this role?
Well, there was a book by Ron Hansen that I read that was beautiful, a really great kind of character study, I thought, and of Robert Ford mostly, and of Jesse James, and then I read the screenplay by Andrew Dominik that was just stunningly beautiful and kind of ornate and strange in its architecture and, you know, just dialogue that just kind of like leapt from the page. And so those two things were kind of my blueprint, because there was nothing available about Robert Ford. There's obviously a lot available about Jesse James, but Robert Ford, there's very little online, very little you can find about him anywhere. There wasn't too much research that I could do other than learning to shoot a gun, ride a horse, and to be really knowledgeable about the period, you know, like reading newspapers every day, you know, every morning, read a newspaper from that morning in the 1880s, and just to kind of immerse myself in the period. And that did help.
You know, there's one review of your performance in this that said your metamorphosis from doormat to predator is a devastating feat of self-transformation. I mean, it is a fascinating character you play, a guy who is a hero worshiper, wants to be close to Jesse James, gets there, and then eventually betrays him. And it's an interesting, I think, question whether Ford becomes someone different or whether the assassin and the hero worshiper are really all part of the same package. Tell us a little bit about this character, how you saw him. What made him want to do in this guy he admired so much?
Well, it might sound strange, but I loved Robert Ford. I read the book and I loved him, and I read the screenplay and I loved him, and I loved playing him. There were times when I felt I hated him and things that he did that were really hard to do, but that's kind of like life. I find that's true with myself. I do and say things every day that I don't. I think, why did I do that? Why did I say that? You're an idiot. So, you know, I really felt for him. I don't think that he was an obsessed fan. I don't think that he was a kind of celebrity, obsessed predator. I don't think that he was any of those things. I think he was a 19-year-old kid, grew up on a farm, reading comic books about Jesse James, who was the youngest of in a big family. And people, no one ever thought that he would sort of amount to anything. And he kind of felt like he had an enormous amount of potential, that he was capable of doing something great, that he was, and specifically, you know, he thought that he could be just like Jesse James. And when he read these comic books, which he thought were real stories, obviously they weren't, he thought, well, if I can get close to Jesse James, you know, he's great, and he's smarter than everyone in my family and all these people around me who tell me I'm nothing. He will recognize in me my potential. He will make me his partner. And then there'll be comic books written about both of us. He was just had this immature fantasy. That's all it was.
Let's listen to a cut from this. This is from The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford and our guest Casey Affleck. You're sitting around with Jesse James and some of the gang at dinner, and the conversation comes up about your character Robert Ford's worship of Jesse James, and you're provoked to talking about it. Let's listen.
Well, if you'll pardon my saying so, I guess it is interesting the many ways you and I overlap and whatnot. I mean, if you begin with our daddies, your daddy was a pastor of the New Hope Baptist Church, and my daddy was a pastor of the church in Excelsior Springs. You're the youngest of three James boys, and I'm the youngest of five Ford boys. Between Charlie and me is another brother, Wilbur here, with six letters in his name. And between Frank and you is another brother, Robert, also with six letters. And my Christian name is Robert, of course. You have blue eyes, I have blue eyes. You're 5 feet 8 inches tall, I'm 5 feet 8 inches tall.
I eat something.
And that was Brad Pitt laughing at the end, playing Jesse James. Our guest, Casey Affleck, was the Bob Ford, a member of his gang at the time. What led Robert Ford to assassinate Jesse James? I mean, if he seemed to worship and seemed to know so much about him.
Well, that scene that you just played is a bit of a pivotal moment in the movie. It's funny to hear it. I've seen the movie twice. I've never just listened to it, and it seems like a different scene to me. I just hear different things. It's such a halting delivery of that speech, and kind of weird. I mean, I'm smiling in that scene a little bit, kind of smirking and shy, and seemed like a kind of a, like, I don't know, a little girl in love or something. And just listening to it just sounds bizarre. But, you know, I think what follows that scene is they make fun of him. He sort of confesses that he has, you know, thinks that he's just like Jesse James. And he's embarrassed, and he gets his feelings hurt. And the next day he goes to the police. You know, it's just a kind of young, rash, impetuous, silly decision, because he's got such hurt feelings that he just lashes out by getting on his horse and going to town and telling the police that he knows where Jesse is and he could turn him in. Now that decision is something he just can't undo. Now now the police know who he is, and they kind of trap him. They don't leave him alone, and they say basically, if you don't capture or kill Jesse James, you're going to jail. And kind of, you know, they just keep pressuring him, and he has to do this thing he never wanted to do. He didn't want to kill Jesse James. It's not Mark David Chapman. He's not crazy. He's not. He didn't want to think he was replacing him. He just put himself in a spot he couldn't get out of. Of course, what happens is that after he does kill him, he gets sort of the thing that he always wanted. He gets, the whole country sees him. He's more recognizable than the President of the United States of America. It's a really, really big deal in the country.
If it's not giving away too much of the story, tell what happens in the years after he assassinates Jesse James.
Well, he becomes very famous. Everyone knows who he is, mostly from this one photograph that's taken of him. And he goes around the country. He does 800 performances reenacting the killing of Jesse James and a kind of theater production with him and his brother, who was there at the murder. And his brother plays Jesse James, and he plays himself. They go on Broadway, and they reenact the murder over and over. And at first, the audiences just eat it up. You know, they love it in the way that you kind of watch it like some of these reality shows. And then they turn against him. The mood of the country just turns kind of really quickly, and people start throwing stuff on him, at him on stage. They hate him. They think he's a, you know, a traitor. And it's mostly because I think people are still affected by the assassination of Lincoln. And so they once the idea gets out that, oh, Robert Ford is an assassin, then everything gets out of control. You know, people just hate him and they don't really know why. The other is that the people who kind of opinion makers, if you will, people in the kind of northern, northeastern cities, those are the only people that are writing about Jesse James. They write the comic books, and they also write the things after he's been killed. That's where Robert Ford is doing these plays, you know, in these big cities, these big urban areas, and they don't know anything about Jesse James. They were never affected by him. He was just some like comic book guy. They'd never been robbed by him. They didn't have a cousin who he killed. You know, Jesse James was terrorizing the state, Missouri. You know, it was they were going around it on their way out west just because they didn't want to be go near the James gang and those outlaws. So it was ruining the economy. It was horrible. He was really kind of hated by many, many people out west, but in the Northeast, people just thought he was fun. You know, they just thought it was nice to, it was fun to read about this guy from a kind of already a bygone era. So when he was killed, they made Robert Ford the kind of two-dimensional figure in the way that they had made Jesse James a two-dimensional figure. They just sort of slotted Robert Ford into this kind of fairy tale, you know, and he, of course, had to be the villain because he was the guy that killed the hero. And it ruined his life. So for the next 10 years, he was plagued by, you know, that one act, and he had to move from town to town because people would run him out of towns, and finally he was shot.
Well, a lot of folks know that you and your brother Ben and Matt Damon all grew up in the same neighborhood in Cambridge, Massachusetts. What got you interested in acting originally?
My mother's best friend in college became a local casting director in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Our families were pretty close. She used to bring Ben and me in, and with her children, and to be extras in movies when we were in school, you know, just little kids, 10 years old. And I didn't really care much about the movies. I just thought, like, well, this is a day off from school. I can graze over, you know, the craft service table for 8 hours. There's more candy than I'd ever gotten to eat. And, you know, you walk away with $15, and, you know, which my mom let me keep. So it was a fortune, and it was a lot of fun. So and then she would bring us in for, like, local, you know, commercials, like the weather commercial and the local news station, that kind of thing. And I kind of thought, like, wow, I'm incredible. I'm getting every part I auditioned for. It turns out that it was, I think she was only bringing me in. I was the only person auditioning. I was the only kid who had a mom that would let them like take 2 days off from school and go stand under a rain machine to do an ad for the weather guy. And but that gave me some confidence.
You were good, yeah.
And then I mostly, you know, the truth is it wasn't until high school that there was a guy named Jerry Specka, who was one of those teachers you kind of just hope your kid gets once in his 12 years of education. And Ben and Matt and I, and a bunch of other working, professional, talented actors, even a guy that's in Gone Baby Gone, he plays the child molester, Corman Earl. He had all of us as students, and he sort of inspired us all. I was playing baseball and, you know, throwing rocks around the street. I didn't have any, I didn't want to be an actor. And it wasn't until, you know, one summer I went and did the summer musical, mostly because it was like 19 girls and it was me and that's it. And you kind of got to spend the summer that way. And that seemed a lot better than like sitting on the bench and the baseball summer league, because I was smaller than everyone by that time. So I said, well, I'm going to go do this. Turns out I was tone deaf. They cut all my my solos, but it was a lot of fun. And then the next year I signed up for the drama class and I found that guy, Jerry Specka, and I've never really wanted to do anything else since then. And And I think that Matt and Ben kind of both feel the same way and had the same experience with Jerry.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us, Casey Affleck.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Actor Casey Affleck recorded last fall. His films The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford and Gone Baby Gone are now out on DVD. Here's some music from the soundtrack of The Assassination of Jesse James, written by Nick Cave. He'll be Terry's guest on Monday. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.